The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome to Guardian Radio AM. My name is Catherine Chisnell Mitchell, and I'm going to start with thanking my friend C.A. Nuri for giving us the microphones today to talk about a subject that will have us all excited around the table today. It's Literacy Week. And anyone with little kids, I'm sure, has sent them off to school at some point this week in questionable costumes of their favorite book characters with great excitement and great enthusiasm. And that's the approach we'll be taking today. I'm joined in the studio today with the remarkable Malin Major, who is the acting secretary of the University of the Bahamas, as well as many, many other roles in many, many areas. As a mother, as an active community and nation builder, as someone who has walked with kings nor lost the common touch, and with
nice call with an F. Yeah.
We'll be printing. Nice. We will be quoting if shortly. And Mr. Travis Miller, what's your job description this year? What do we call? How do we introduce ourselves?
Technology nowadays? And business consulting and development.
And heavily adept in AI literacy, but also just somebody who is one of our young, bright visionaries and brains in the country, and who is always bringing to the forefront new ideas and new ways to embrace that which is opportunity in our Bahama land. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, and I'll stop there because that's what goes through my mind every time in a bank line. I won't talk bad about my bank, but every
wait.
Time.
Gotta
and today,
wait.
That's what I want us to be touching on.
Yeah.
What are the quotes, the books, the ideas, the memories that have been residual and influential in your mind? What things have you read in your life, through school or otherwise, that have kept you company on a daily basis? In my interviews leading up to this show, so many people brought up the Rudyard Kipling poem, If. I think it was voted the UK's most favorite poem of all time. And I know teachers, students, friends and family all said in their list of things that stay keep them company in their daily life. I'm going to have one more guest coming into the studio now, Mr. Lazar Chalchin. I would like to say that everyone in the studio today is a QC Comet. It's not my fault that the brilliant brains convened here today, but
I have to represent for Kingsway the Saints.
Travis, you're here too.
Yeah.
So we're so happy to have you here. We can't really talk about literacy without touching on illiteracy. The fact that hundreds of millions of people across the world, 763 million adults, according to UNESCO statistics, cannot read or write, that two-thirds of these people are women, that 250 million children have failed to acquire basic literacy skills in the last few years. Before the COVID pandemic, these were the numbers in the struggle. And that, of course, was cited as the worst disruption in education in a century. 617 million children and teenagers have not reached minimum reading levels. Now, the Bahamas, as far as statistic goes, and I did try in the research for the show to find a updated statistic on our literacy levels, but according to global standards, we have a 95% literacy rate. However, many employers will tell you that when it comes to seeking out talent for the job market, that's not necessarily translating to paper. That's not necessarily translating to real life and functional skills. So if there was a pandemic globally, the fact that literacy or illiteracy is something that can be treated with ideas and enthusiasm and education is something we're here to talk about today. But we want to take a little bit of a different approach today. I want to talk about why, what our love of literature is, what has moved us, what stays with us, what made us stay in love with the words that inspire you and move you on a daily basis. Good morning, Mr. Lazar Charlton.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
He has just stepped glowing into the studio.
Glowing.
This is another QC comment that has come on in.
That's
and we're
right.
excited to have him today because he's going to be talking about his work of literature, his modern day, I shouldn't say modern day. It's a comic book done that talks about Bahamian heroes that he'll be presenting later at school today, I believe, with great enthusiasm.
Yes, I will.
And so he's somebody who has returned to the Bahamas, and he is he's gone against that which we call the brain drain. He left as a glowing star, and we're like, he's never coming back. He's too beautiful, and he's too talented. But not only did he come back, he invested into the country. He took with great guts as an entrepreneur at a time when small business was being kneecapped at every corner. He wears many hats, like everyone else in the studio today, and he has recently published a book that we're going to get to in a minute. But to start off, I just have to say, I know my love of literature began because it was modeled for me. My dad was not university or college educated, but he was one of the people I knew. He sat in his chair every night, and you could see the smile and the contentment on his face as he read. My mother always treated books like they were treats. Like after exams, she would have a pile of our favorite books because we didn't have many bookstores back in the day. I think it was the Nassau Christian Bookstore and then eventually Logos.
Yeah.
And have a pile of our favorite books after exams as our treat. It was always a treat to have one more page read to us at nighttime. My grandfather just resorted to bribery. He's like, $25 if you memorize if. $25 if you memorize Desiderata. And that has served us, served me again daily. Daily. My father would sometimes read Shakespeare plays for fun with us. Now, I'm not saying this is a norm, but these were the behaviors modeled to us,
right,
along with teachers like Mrs. Comer. I have to call her name because in grade three, she said if we hurried up and finished our work, she would read to us. And sometimes it would be an hour and a half of her reading Roald Dahl with the most theatrical enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And so it was treated as something that was a treat, that was a reward, that was something that we could take contentment in. I believe everyone here has a love of reading. And I've had a lot of people share with me, and we'll intersperse that throughout the show. But does anyone here have wants to start off with something that stays with them on a daily basis? Malin, my who has a poetic soul and who has supported Rampley Homes for Children and their reading program for years now. So I thank her for that.
I would definitely say two poems stay with me. One, Odd. Alfred Tennyson's The Lady of Shalott, which is a ballad and just a beautifully written poem that just takes you away. And I love reading fantasy. And so that helps give me the escapism I need during my day. And then Maya Angelou's Phenomenal Woman. Mm-hmm. I think not when I was younger, but definitely by the time I hit university, that was the poem for me. It just got me going, kept me going. I could wake up. I can do this.
Quote it. Quote me a line.
I'm going to cheat. I'm totally going to cheat.
Is the Lady of Shalott, is that the one Anne of Green Gables reads?
Yeah. I feel like on either side the river lie, long fields of barley and of rye that clothe the world and reach the sky. That's the start of the
Lady
of Shalott.
I will say that many, many people quoted the same Phenomenal Woman poem to me when I was asking for that which moved them. Many women of a certain age.
And Phenomenal Woman reads, pretty women wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. But when I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me.
And my good friend and my children's former teacher, Ashley Haven, also loves a Maya Angelou poem, Still I Rise. Oh. Just like hope springing high, still I rise. And that also came up over and over again as something that moved. And that the fact that Maya Angelou was an influence to young women, young Bahamian women I've talked to a lot, I think that it's really important. Lazar, would you like me to skip over you to Travis to give you a second? Are you ready?
I am ready.
Go off.
Stay ready, man. So my favorite quote that I often think about a lot is, out of chaos comes opportunity. my friends who know me well and family know that my life can sometimes be a little bit chaotic with what I have going on all the time. But I find that, you know, when I'm in a space that I'm not settled, instead of kind of, you know, resting in the despair of that space that you're in, I have now made it a habit to think about, okay, so what can I get out of this situation, or how can I lift someone else up? So that's one of my favorite quotes, I guess, that I think about when I'm feeling in a chaotic or not very restful place.
Yeah,
and I think this is the 4-year anniversary of COVID, of the
The whole 4 years have been chaotic.
WHO declaring that there was a global pandemic happening. So there's been a lot of reflection this week, and I think that the last 4 years is having to be purpose out of chaos. And
100%.
It's spoken. I think that as a Bahamian people, we're fairly resilient. We're like, oh, another hurricane. Still I rise. Yes, Travis, you're coming up.
So I have two. One I will attempt to do from memory. The next one is like the same one that we like, Desiderata, but like the one I've been gravitating towards recently too is Psalm 131. Mm-hmm. I just said, oh Lord, my heart is not lifted too high. I don't occupy myself with things too great or too marvelous for me. I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child. My soul is with me, O Israel, hope in the Lord this time forth and forevermore. Like for me, that has been a lot of the same too in terms of chaos around you, but also like the amount of decisions and choices that you have to make, and you feel like it's like, do I walk with Christ or do I walk for my own selfish things as well too? But it's like you find in that peace and that center in Christ to be like, okay, maybe I don't have to make a choice or a decision that I feel like I have to, or like let my anger get the best of me. It's like you have the control.
Control.
Yeah, and yep. Like I have peace in this moment of time right now where there might be a storm or chaos or anything like that. And then a Desiderata is a... you are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it's clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be. And whatever your labors and aspirations and the noisy confusion of life, keep peace with your soul. And there's unless you want to cap off the last lines, but...
Sing it.
Yeah.
Every time I hear it, I hear the song.
Yeah, with all the sham, drudgery, and broken dreams,
it's still a beautiful world.
Be cheerful, strive to be happy.
How old do my children have to be before I start bribing them to memorize these things? And will $25 still cut it? There's been inflation. I know this from what the Tooth Fairy has demanded.
It's never too early.
No.
Yeah.
I find that also people have said that more than of a companion, the books have sometimes been a parent. There hasn't always been in eras times when education is easily accessible to our older generation. With our younger generation and the people we see, we know that poverty, the social dependence, the criminal behaviors are linked to illiteracy.
Right.
But there are so many people in our lives, I know, that have come from other cultures that had education disrupted due to work or travel or low income or just access to the right schools that had to find books to parent them. My great-grandfather, I knew, leaned heavily on Les Miserables, Victor Hugo, and that basically migrated from Greece into the United States and leaned heavily on the words of that. I know that I put this on the family WhatsApp earlier this week, and I was moved by how many things we all have privately in common that carry us through the day. One of the poems shared also was by Ella Wheeler Wilcox that said, "And out of must and mist and murk, another truth shines plain. It is my power each day and hour to add to its joy or its pain."
And can't write bars like that anymore.
But you can live them. We can live them if you try to carry on. And as you talk about writing, I think everyone in this room has a call to write in some way, right? Mm-hmm. I know that we're going to talk to our published author here, but we also have our in-house poet who I read often. I actually think you're one of the people I read the most on Instagram.
Oh, really?
I enjoy her.
I feel like 2 cents.
I enjoy your musings on motherhood because I know that Bailey has come to motherhood recently, and sometimes how she will write for or about her child, her daughter, is something that brings me almost to tears because I see that which I survived, a time that could be a lot tiring and dark, beautifully put on the page. And yes, my mother's told me to slow down, so I'm going to try and do that. Tell me a little bit about your call to write. What does that mean for you?
Definitely my call to writing started with reading. I have been reading since I was 2 years old, and to be a good writer, you have to be a reader. So I think for sure it started there. And I think I come from a family of educators, and my aunt, in fact, wrote. She wrote poetry. She wrote speeches. She was the writer in the family. And she, along with my mother, really encouraged me when I first started scribbling my one or two lines. And it just sort of burgeoned from there. I was continually and continuously encouraged. And I just kept at it so much so I was so in love with it. And my teachers at Queen's College encouraged it that I went and I did a degree in English literature and then another one in poetic practice because I just felt like I'm going to be a writer. That was the plan, that I was going to be a writer. And I've stuck with it. I've taught creative writing classes at the University of the Bahamas, and I am still part of a dedicated group of writers and working on my first published book. I'm published
in
peer-reviewed journals and things like that. Working on my first collection of poetry.
And also part of a vibrant book club that will make you jealous if you see their posting. I don't get FOMO often, but looking at the pictures they have, I'm like, I want to read with a group of people that look this stylish, this cute, and have these kind of snacks. So again, you engage it as something's fun and tactile. Yeah. I appreciate that as we have this conversation, it was pointed out to me before the show, that to read for leisure and for pleasure is a luxury seen by many. And in turn, someone says, no, it's not a luxury, it's a necessity. Is that which we need to feed our souls in whichever way we take it into ourselves? And I know that the people that have said in their greatest poverty in life, they always had written words to help see them through. Mm-hmm. It is accessing that through literacy that no matter what our financial, social, emotional, spiritual states, if we have crossed the border from illiteracy to the magical, miraculous world of words, we can access any healing, any balm, any therapy, any priest, anything we need for ourselves. So we have to, again, continue to open up the world in that area. And again, that's why we're trying to talk about what makes things exciting and accessible. I kind of want to talk to Lazar now. Because talking about exciting and accessible, one of the things that has...
Exactly.
And I don't mean to offend everyone here today, but everyone in here today is a role model. Yeah. And I know that's offensive because that makes you all sound old, wizened, middle-aged. No, you're young, vibrant, and have really good teeth on the whole. And so, traditionally, and I did my master's in the history, but one of the subjects that puts children to sleep on a class desk or wishing they could be so is history, especially Bahamian history, that I say this with love as a Bahamian, okay? But they're like, how are we studying this again? Why is it the same? How can I reach into it that so it's something that is touchable and understandable? And Lazar, have you done that here with the adventures of, is it Cohen?
Yes, it is.
Okay, is it The Adventures of Cohen? I know that this is launched a little while back, but is this in every student's hand in every school across the country yet?
Not yet, but that is the goal. That's the ultimate goal, is to have my book be a part of the Bahamian educational curriculum. Mm-hmm. I believe that students can really benefit from it, social studies and history as well. My drive behind... Or one of the drives behind writing this book was for education, and not just for entertainment purposes.
So what is this book? Tell us, what are we looking at when we open this book up?
So Cohen is based off of a real boy. He's based off of a younger nephew. So one day, and he doesn't remember this, but I was talking to him, and I had asked him who the gentleman was on the $1 bill. And as we know, it's Sir Lyndon Pinling, the first Prime Minister of the Bahamas. And he did say his name. He said that, yes.
I hope we all know that, everybody. Hope we all know that.
Yeah, so he did say, yes, that is Sir Lyndon Pinling. And I said, what else about him do you know? And he didn't know. Mm. And I find that a lot of the younger cohort, they don't really know a lot about our nation builders on the whole. And I was like, you know what? I think that I should do something about it. I didn't know what I was going to do about it at the time. But then I just put pen to paper one day, and I was like, I'm going to write a story about our nation builders, and I wanted Cohen to be the main protagonist of the book. And
immortalized forever.
And I decided to start off with Sir Lyndon Pinling. I mean, like, who better to start off with to kind of teach kids about, you know, the ultimate nation builder, our first prime minister. So,
and I have to say, as someone who has recently, my old age, come to anime and quiz,
why is it so important? Yeah.
This is, first of all, it's illustrated by
Dahar Butler, who is an absolutely amazing illustrator and animator.
And Bahamian.
Yes, and he is Bahamian. I 100% wanted the book to be illustrated by a Bahamian.
I mean, the illustrations are magnificent. Again, as someone who has recently come to anime culture appreciation, because I have young kids and because I realize that in the pandemic there's so much to entertain us. This is, it's engaging. You open it up and you very want much to read it. It makes you feel like going through the pages and like it's not a punishment.
Yeah, right. So like that was one of the goals of writing the book. You know, I mean, I was a huge fan of comics.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, a
let's
huge fan of comics growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
My older brother and I, we had a collection of over 400 comic books.
Yeah.
And we read every single one of them. My mother, the one thing that she did spend money on, we could ask for, is books and comics.
Yeah.
She never skimped on those.
Comic was the loophole.
Yep, that was a loophole, right? So any sort of reading material, right? So any sort of reading material, yep. She was like, yep, absolutely, here you go. And I remember how much I was so, you know, engaged by comic books. And I was like, you know what? I want to kind of have that be the vehicle for these kids to learn.
Mm.
Well, I think it was Alondra Russell, who is a teacher, a grade six teacher at Queen's College and a spelling bee coach and former and librarian. But she said she encourages the children to read anything, including comics, because again, not that it's a gateway drug. But if you can capture the heart, if you can make it feel like a romantic treat, then the learn will come.
Yeah.
But it's the love that you want to get. You want them to look at. You want them to feel the desire to read, to go into a different world. And I feel like this is accepting that there's a language, an approach, a medium that makes things feel more accessible, and saying yes instead of your eyes, like, immediately becoming weighted down, as you said.
By just words on a paper, right?
On a paper. You're like, oh, this is something, a world I can reach into and wish to understand. And the fact that history is essential to us moving forward as a nation, as a vision, as people that can understand and take gratitude, but also take lessons from what we've gone through. I think that this is vital. And I believe that every school in the Bahamas should have it. What has been the what has been your response from the Ministry of Education? What are they saying to you right now?
I have been chatting with some people at the ministry who have been very helpful in getting my book through the door, so to speak. But, you know, it is very difficult because I find, and I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but people, you know, in our cohort, we find value in different types of education now versus these type of education methods that we had when we were kids. So I think that my book in particular is going to catch a lot of eyes of young kids who see the bright colors and the comic strips and someone who looks like them inside that book. Rather than, as you said before, words on a paper.
Mm.
I have been chatting with a few people. I'm hopeful to get some more traction on it. But yeah, I have a goal that by September of 2024 to at least have it on the reading lists of most schools in the but I'm up for the task. I really, really believe in my book.
Yeah, man, and just paving the way at the same time, you know what I mean? Like, don't you trying to figure out the difficulties in which this does in order to get it done will open the door for Bahamian author, publisher, where again it kind of, you're the kid in the book but you're not the kid in the book, but the kid in the book who made the book is also the kid in the book.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, and that's the power of story, that's the power of literature in terms of like seeing a different way to do different things or looking at it from a different perspective and then like plowing through with like your story.
100%.
It's a vibe.
No, and I appreciate that coaching, because Travis is always someone who's pushing the envelope. He's got the new ideas. He is fully AI literate.
this whole ChatGPT thing.
He's like, let's talk about AI literacy. I'm like, you should definitely talk about that. I saw a meme the other day. My algorithm knew I was preparing for this, and it says, you know, everyone's bemoaning the loss of cursive language, but half this generation can't download an app without wiring half their bank account to somewhere across the world. And I said, but everything's necessary. And we don't have to let go of what is good from the written word, the wonder of holding a book in your hand and being transported somewhere else because of that. Having your imagination become something that leads to action, and also being able to communicate in new ways, communicate in comics, communicate in through computer literacy and the things that the doors that opens. Mm. One of my favorite quotes, and something that was hugely influential. Now, I want to pretend I read the book first, but it was really the musical of Don Quixote de la Mancha, which I saw in the, you know how you say you read something, but you know you listen to the audiobook or the podcast. So I would like to say I read Cervantes and Don Quixote when I was young, but in the musical at the Dundas, and I don't think anyone's that old. And I remember being so moved by it, getting the little tape and listening to, tapes, they used to exist, children, but y'all are in school, so you know.
Wait, the Dundas
anyone listening should know. But I got the little
tape. Audio.
I listened to all of the stuff.
Cassette tapes.
And I was really moved by this man who sees the moral high ground and refused to relinquish it. And one of my favorite quotes from the book is, "And maddest of all is to see life as it is and not life as it ought to be." Mm. And basically being like, I am determined to dream despite the madness. That I'm claiming imagination is something that drives action, that drives change, and ultimately makes you human. It humanizes you to imagine is something that's imperative. And he undergoes so much character growth throughout the story. So it's something that impacted my mindset when I was younger. I feel like I have like a golden girls mentality, but I appreciate that. And I appreciate that, as again, we were asking people what moved them. So many of us had the same things in common. I will say Veronica Roberts, who is not listening, but who is a famed grade 6 teacher and librarian at Queen's College. They're not paying me or anything, but and so many of your students have written and said, yes, you made them memorize if. Yes, you read certain things to them. You quoted certain things to them. That just listening to your voice through an open door as people passed the library, they knew that there was wisdom and gravity there that could change and solidify lives. Although I did not have you as a teacher, I've had you in my life for many decades, and I know this to be true. And I know so many people could come to the microphone and speak to a teacher or an influence that would have the same sort of impact to them. Another poem that has come up a few times in these interviews, of course, is The Invictus, which was famed by the great Nelson Mandela. Of out of the night that conquers me, black as a pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. And he credits them, keeping him unsunk. I'm not sure if that's a real word, Marilyn. Don't edit me all that. keeping his spirit buoyed as he served his long sentence. And that brought him out eventually. One more quote before we go back to the crowd. But morning always grows again and again out of the darkness, though it may be not for the people that saw the sun go down. And we'll have a lot of our generations watch the sun go down. We are the lantern bearers, my friend, for us to keep something burning, to carry what light we can forward into the darkness and into the wind. And the lantern bearer's contribution comes from my cousin George, who's taken a lot of nation building, toastmastering, church leadership in his life, because I believe that he, like so many of us that are here, despite all the chaos, Lazar, that there is something worth keeping burning in our culture and in our nation. I think also that, and Malin is a huge supporter of Bahamian authors. How are we doing with Bahamian authors and writing? And if anyone's listening wants to call in with your favorite book or quote, come on and call on in. Yeah. How are we doing as a culture? Are we supportive of our writers? Is it like every other artist, they're struggling to find backing? How do we do when we publish books?
I think two things. So Lazar spoke to a bit of it, having to market your own work, really beat the streets, get news of your writing out there, beg people to follow your Instagram, Malin.writes on Instagram.
Yeah, share this one.
And I think we have, at least I'm exposed to, many more Bahamian writers, many more Bahamian poets now that I'm older, when we were younger, there were a few that we were introduced to. Marion Bethel comes to mind. And, of course, one of my favorites, Robert Johnson, who we studied in school. Mm-hmm. I think when we have a more society that appreciates reading more and values reading and loves reading, Bahamian writers will be 150% more appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now we are appreciated and they love us. Names like Patricia Glinton Mikolas come to mind. But as the writing scene grows and our community grows, we are sort of relegated to spoken word poetry events or slam poetry events. And there isn't really clamor in the general public for literary events, to go to a reading. One of the things I did in university, which was like absolute favorite, I can like bucket list tick, is I went to a reading that Salman Rushdie had, and he read from his latest novel at the time. And I just sat there absolutely enthralled, agog, like, oh, like best thing ever. And I think we don't have that hair yet, but the writers that we do have, we love them, we really appreciate them, we study them, and I think we need to give way more attention and love to them. And we try to do that at the University of the Bahamas every March, and it's happening next week. We have the Blue Flamingo Literary Festival, which really, we always work Bahamian literature into that, and we try to honor Bahamian artists. Last fall, we honored four Bahamian writers: Pat Ramming for his poetry, Susan Wallace, again, for her poetry, Dr. Ian Strawn, and Patricia Glinton Mikolas. Mm-hmm. And we want to do that every other year just to hype them up, give people their flowers while they're here, but also to sensitize the community a bit more that, yes, Bahamians are out there. We are still writing. We will continue to write. And we write really well. And I think this really is the QC commercial. But you graduated with...
Some angry sackers are going to call in soon.
Janice Lynn Mather.
Yes.
Who,
I was just going to say yes.
Yes. She's an amazing writer. And she writes young adult novels that are all about living in the Bahamas. They have Bahamian characters, and they're just wonderful. It is so nice to sit and read something that is you, and you feel at home.
And she's a true writer by soul. She used to hand me snippets of her writing in like French class. Sorry, Mr. Fowkes. And and I would say this girl is cold to do this. Of course, we have another writer, a writer that's usually at this microphone, Mr. C.A. Nuri, who is a poet and retailer of Bahamian myths especially. He has a beautiful way of taking that, which is historical legend, and writing it in a way that can be a little dark, a little mysterious, a little mythical, but has a beautiful depth and elegance to it. So I look forward to one day getting him back phone to finish interviewing him on his work and what we can do to be supporting that. Because, and I love Patricia Mikolas Glinton. I love how she's reclaimed our language as our own and attached history to it to give it validity and weight and not just call it bad English. It's not bad English. It's our English.
Yes.
It's how we talk. Mm. And the other names you've mentioned are iconic. And I actually have Robert Johnson written down as an influence on me, because I can't lie. When I studied him at school, I don't remember enjoying it. However, I will say with great apology, his poems have stayed with me daily. Mm. I think we have a caller in. Tell me of your homeland, wanderer. When I was away, at all times, we have a caller. This is very exciting. One moment, please. Welcome to Guardian AM.
Yes, good morning. This is Amanda Colson.
No, this is not. This is another whitish person.
White. White.
But I'm a little more off-white than her. I'm a little more mango.
Guys. Yeah, listen, you know, whoever it was who said that reading takes you into another world, I hats off to that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's what it does for me, right?
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was excited to hear that. And so I just wanted to appreciate that phrase. And so the thing is about reading is I don't know if... I went to COB when it was COB, and so there was a lady there by the name of Telsey Intern. I can't remember her full name.
Telsey Intern Roll, yes.
My good cousin.
Very nice lady, soft spoken, and I was a Jamaican teacher. So it is between her and John Stone that they had introduced us into to poetry. And so I think it was Roger Mayer's, Claude Marquis, Andrew Sulky. And so it wasn't until then that I really became intrigued, you know, just because it was African poetry.
Right.
And I realized that it was like the poems were historical, and so I started to draw attention to them, even though I don't read much poetry, but I read books. I don't like novels. You might get me to read a novel here and there, but I just like documentaries and factual books.
Yeah, that's your palette, you know?
It really has paid off for me. And it is really, I don't know, it's like when I get angry sometimes, it's a way to comfort me. So I don't know if most people would share that sentiment, but the thing is, it's sad that what you said might be true now in the contemporary times, and that poverty is juxtaposed to the lack of, you know, the proliferation of illiteracy. But when you realize back in the days, because so many blacks, as post-slavery, they wanted to educate themselves, it didn't have anything to do with poverty. They were just willing to engage in reading and know that it was powerful. So I'm afraid that what you're saying might be true, but I kind of disagree with that, and I would hate to believe that it is true, because it shouldn't be that way. You understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
I'll finish listening. Thank you, guys.
No, wait, before you go, if you were to recommend a book to young men nowadays, if someone's saying, I'm facing anger, I would like, what would you, do you have a book that you would recommend that you said, this really helped me through this time?
Well, I don't know. I just, there's a book called Killing of the Flower Moon.
Yes.
I thought it was very interesting. I haven't read it yet, but I've skimmed through it. Any book, really and truly.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Just any book you can pick up. It could be eugenics. It could be anything. But you know, basically African poetry. It could be. I prefer if they pick up some African poetry and read that.
Thank you so much for your call. I'm looking up your book now so that we can give the correct author and recommend it, because I know that this has come out recently as a film, a way of getting people interested. A lot of the young people in my life, I know there's controversy attached to it, did fall in love with the Harry Potter series, and it did carry them into reading other things and other genres that I find that no other series of a certain generation did.
Right.
And that was Eleni Maria. You said that was one of the quotes of the books that really lifted you out of times of darkness with Lumos. Travis, I would like you to answer our caller. What are your thoughts on what he said?
I was just still stuck on going off of the pop. So first of all, I don't, big nerd moment, but Akira Toriyama, he was the manga artist for Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z.
May he rest in peace.
But he just had an idea and a pen and paper, and look how much people had impacted around the world from these stories. People resonate with the Dragon Ball story, but that opened up so much different worlds for anime, for film, for even crossing barriers between different languages. A lot of people just get into Japanese and then Korean, you know, people watching more subtitled movies. Just it opens up a whole different world just from from putting yourself out there and telling that story. For me, story is powerful in that regard. Oh, you have a caller?
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But we do have another caller, so let's go ahead and take that. Good morning. You're on the air with Guardian AM.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Good show. Good show. Excellent show.
Thank you.
Reading is definitely fundamental. And I wish the gentleman all the best to get that book into the schools, because I like what he said about the children reading books, seeing images of themselves inside the book. I really felt that. I really appreciate that. So I wish you all
the best.
Thank
you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so since y'all talking about sharing quotes and different things, and it goes like this. It says, throughout history, it has been the inaction of those who could have acted, the indifference of those who should have known better, the silence of the voice of justice when it mattered most, that has made it possible for evil to triumph. And that is a quote by the Emperor Haile Selassie I. And you asked about books that I feel as if young men or people could read, especially young men. They could read a book called My Life and Ethiopia's Progress. They have volume 1 and 2 by Emperor Haile Selassie, or they can read one called The Wise Mind, of Emperor Haile Selassie.
And I believe that quote... Go ahead.
Thank you very much. It's a good show. And like I said, I wish the gentleman all the best in that book that he's trying to put in the schools. Thank you very much.
Go get a copy. Yes.
Excellent, excellent quote. And also, I think that was one of the unwritten creeds of the Black Panther movement, that they use that over and over again in their call to arms. So thank you so much for your call, and I appreciate the recommendation. We actually have a couple of callers coming in, so let me just go ahead over that. Yeah. Good morning. This is Guardian AM. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. I'd like to make a comment, please.
Hi, Mom. Yes, please. Go ahead. Maria Chisnell was a former English teacher at Queen's College and the lady I can attribute teaching me that books were treats.
Well, I would like to tell you all that this is a subject very dear to me and I hope very dear to our country. But I'm going to be 71 at the end of this month and my heart still loves the teacher in the sixth grade, Miss Kathleen Proctor, who read aloud to our class every day. I will never Pippi Longstocking and Heidi, and those were the books of the time. But she instilled in me a love of reading that has never left. I also want to say that as a teacher of English for many years, I always read to my students, and I recently had the wonderful compliment of meeting one from, oh my goodness, 1975, who told me he now reads audiobooks aloud for a living because of that experience. However, my point is, and I don't want to turn this conversation negative, but as my daughter will attest, I have such grave problems with our educational system, where if a teacher takes a class out under a tree in the hot summer day and reads lovely poems to them or a book or whatever, it's seen as being a waste of time. We don't make time anymore in our classrooms for the fun things, for the things that can't be graded, for the exams that don't need to be had. And I would like to encourage those in power to bring reading out loud to children back into the classroom and into our country, and to encourage younger parents to just take those few minutes a day and read to your child. Doesn't matter. Well, you can even read the newspaper with them if you want to. Yeah. But encourage every young person in our country not just to look at their phones or their video games, but to pick that up part. A book, a magazine, or read online. Yeah. So that's an old lady's perspective today. Thank
70,
you.
71 young, Mom. Thank you so much. And thank you for making, I agree with much of your point, and thank you for saying it in a way a Toastmaster would be proud. I'll try to slow down. We do actually have another caller, so we're going to go straight into that.
Bye-bye.
Good, love the calls.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Guardian
A. Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, I enjoy this. It's good for the mind. My grandmother would say, if you don't travel the world, the best way to travel to the books.
Yep.
Take a look inside a book. Reading Rainbow. Anyone? No, I'm old. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was fascinating. When I was a little boy, that's true. Travel all around the world, you know everything. But I have to recommend a book that's doing the psychology. It's by John Adams called Competent to Consulent. That is a good book for anyone to get into dealing with the mind. Any more of you have that book?
No, I'm writing it now right now. Yeah. Competent to what?
Can you say
Consulate.
That?
Consulate.
By John Adams.
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, it's by John. You got a writer?
Yeah.
Okay, right. You could Google it online. But when I was studying the theology of the Christian psychology, that explore my mind helped me a lot on understanding the very capacity of the psychology.
Nice.
But I continue to listen and enjoy the show.
Thank you,
Mike.
Thank you.
So I believe, and this is a John Adams I'm talking about. Yes, I also had to read some of this through my education. So thank you. I'm going to Google this to make sure we have the correct information to pass on to our audience. And thank you so much for your call. And to my my panel here. I have to say, with one of the things also that came up today is, like, aren't we living in a post-literature society? Aren't all our brains able to read only 30 seconds or less? Now, I'll say I'm a little bit guilty of this. I'm addicted to my phone. I love it very much. Well, and sometimes when I see an article that says more than a two-minute read, I'm like, that's okay. I'll read a comment and they'll summarize for me what it says. So how do we slow down, as my mother says that I need to do as a Toastmaster, and how do we get our minds to read under a tree? Is it a parental duty? Yes. And we've put a lot on our schools, but where is this lap time? Like, how are we doing this, Maylin?
Definitely. Yeah. I totally agree with everything your mother said, 100%. It is going under the tree. It is taking the tablet away, and it is reading to them. I think my greatest joy right now as a parent is when my daughter said, "Let's read, Mommy." Mm-hmm. And she will grab a book, whichever book it is.
Does she have a favorite book?
Right now it's Pete the Kitty Does Potty Time.
You're welcome.
And she will read along with me. And I've noticed she will sit there and read by herself. And she can't read yet. She's only 2.5. But she will sit and she turns pages and she goes, "Pete is pulling his pants down. Pete." And she does her own reading. And that brings me the greatest joy. And as tired as I can be sometimes, and as much as I do want to scroll on my phone, I do make the time to sit and read with her every night. And every time she asks, I am going to read with her. And I let her see me reading. And I show her that even when I'm reading on my tablet or on my Kindle, that no, Mommy is reading a book. Because I think it's really important that we make time for that. I think earlier in the show, you said it's a luxury or is a necessity. And I think, honestly, it's a necessity. But your mother was speaking to those things not seen as important in education anymore. They are very, very important. They are education. If you are a good reader, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. Early in my life, in high school, I actually wanted to be a doctor.
And so did I.
And a doctor, my mom took me to speak to a doctor, and he said to me, you know, like, "Well, what are your best subjects?" And I said, "Actually, English language and English literature. Sucked at sciences." And he said, "That will make you the best. If you can read well, if you can write well, if you know literature, you can communicate well. That will make you a better doctor than any doctor who can recite the periodic table and knows all the physics."
Well, that was the right answer.
Yeah.
Good doctor to speak with, because I could have gone, and I appreciate that that was the take on it, because bedside matter matters the most.
Exactly. In the late, great George Sherman.
Yes. And if we're on to the last few minutes. Do we have any last thoughts, any last quotes, any takeaways?
Just excited. I didn't think I was going to be this excited about as I am, because I'm super excited just to hear these stories, to hear people engage and listen what other people are saying, right? But, like, everything is story. Like, whether it's a business, your personal brand, or whatever you're trying to achieve. And, like, if you want to access different stories, you have to read and explore different worlds and new ideas and learn from different people and kind of put those things together as well too, right? So, like, if you have any doubt about reading, just try a book. Just, it could be a small book. It could be
It could be a comic
book.
Yeah, I will say
You know? But, like, it pays dividends to, like, read.
And those that read are financially better off. Yeah. It's just statistics. I will say three things quickly, that we have the UB Literacy Week coming up.
The Blue Flamingo Literary Festival, Thursday, March 21st to the 22nd. It starts with a keynote address by Dr. Ian Strawn, Bitters for the Soul. Please follow the University of the Bahamas Facebook page for more information.
We have The Adventures of Cohen, Journeys with Bahamian Heroes, about to be in QC Grade 3 in about an hour. And it's also available for purchase at?
At Logos Bookstore in Harbor Bay Shopping Center, at The New Duff on West Bay Street.
Which, if you need to go there if you haven't, also need something on your while you're there.
Yes. And also, it's soon to be in the National Art Gallery bookstore as well.
Anywhere else listening that want to carry this book, please let us know. And if you're not a reader, have someone read to you. My husband would kill me for saying this. I read him the entire Harry Potter series during our newlywed year. It was lit. It was exciting. He loved it. Thank you so much for being here, everyone. Pick up a book and read today, The Adventures of Cohen. Thank you to Travis, Lazar, Maylin.
Thank you guys.
I hope we could do something like this again. Appreciate you all.
Thank you.
Read on. Let's read, Bahamas.